Welcome to Earth Eats. I'm your host, Kate Young. Today on our show, we head out to a farm in South Central Indiana to glean some peppers for a food bank. We'll also spend some time in the kitchen with Italian food historian Simone Cenotto. All coming up on Earth Eats. But first, let's check in with Mark Chilla. What's the news, Mark?
Well, Kate, I have a couple stories for you today. First, rising carbon dioxide levels are making veggies and grains less nutritious. And according to a new report from Politico, few people seem to know why it's happening. Enter mathematician Irakli Lolaja and a team of biologists at Arizona State University. They found a link between climate change and lower nutrition density after studying algae. In their study, algae grown with more sunlight grew faster and more plentiful than regular algae, but the faster-growing algae contained fewer nutrients and more sugar. Though plants like corn, soybeans, and various other staple crops are not getting more sunlight, they are getting more carbon dioxide by absorbing it from the air. More carbon dioxide increases photosynthesis, which creates more glucose. And that glucose replaces some of the plant's other nutrients, like protein, iron, and zinc. What this means for humans is only just starting to be investigated. The Politico report shows that there may be obstacles in the path of researching the effect of carbon dioxide on food, including the ability to attain fields for lab work, the slow pace of research, and a political environment skeptical of climate change. And the U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates between 18 and 19 billion pounds of grain products are wasted annually. A study in the U.K. found that 34 to 44% of all the country's bread is wasted. Two of the country's favorite grain products, bread and beer, generate high amounts of waste. Bread has a short shelf life, and much of the grain used for beer is stewed and then discarded. To help tackle this problem, the Chelsea Brewing Company in New York has started brewing beer from bread, copying a version made in the UK that is based on an ancient Babylonian recipe. The New York brewers have partnered with a local bakery called Bread Alone, which donated cubed and frozen surplus bread. The grain stew, known as wort, used to make the toast beer, is about 40% bread. The company estimates each batch saves about 500 pounds of bread from going to landfills. You can check out these news items and more on our website. Go to eartheats.org.
Thanks, Mark.
No sweat.
We'll see you next week. Before I started producing Earth Eats, I worked at a food pantry. Our focus was healthy food, and we brought in as much fresh produce as we could. It was my job to share simple ways to prepare vegetables, like rainbow chard and zucchini. So often what you find in food pantries are picked over fruits and vegetables. Food that's been shipped from far away and then sat on the shelves too long. It was great when we'd get pallets full of beautiful local produce, greens that I knew had just been harvested. We got that kind of food because the Hoosier Hills Food Bank has a garden and gleaning program. They have their own garden where they grow rows of different kinds of vegetables from March through October. It's more like a small-scale farm. They also take volunteer crews out to local farms to glean produce from the fields. Sarah Swan is the food bank's garden and gleaning coordinator. I met her and a group of volunteers out at Harriman Farms in Spencer, Indiana. I wanted to see what gleaning looks like on the ground.
It's probably not muddy yet, right? Okay, so we can take our van. And same tomatoes and peppers as last time? Okay. Anything else that we should pick or leave? So basically, starting in like mid-July, we come out here and we pick whatever Will is offering us pretty much. So a lot of times it's things that they've already gone through and harvested the like most aesthetically pleasing, or the things that are easy to harvest in mass really quickly, and then we go through to like the more like nitpicky, like reaching deeper into tomato plants, or things that maybe aren't quite as like saleable, which ends up being a ton of food. Like last year it was over 170,000 pounds. It's a huge program for us, and like one of the best ways we get really local produce. So, and then it goes back to the food bank and agencies pick it up, usually within a week. So it's pretty quick turnaround. We try to move things pretty fast because you saw our warehouse, it's not huge.
Oh yeah.
But we have over 100 agencies that we serve. So there's a lot of different groups coming through and getting those things and distributing them out to people in the community. So what you guys are picking today will probably be out on someone's dinner table in a week.
Awesome.
So that's the goal, at least.
The volunteer group varies from week to week. During the school year, they often have service learning students volunteering for a class requirement. And they have some regulars, like Dan Morelli.
My name is Dan Morelli. I come out every Tuesday. I've been doing it now. This is my fourth year. Anywhere from 3 to 4 hours, depending on how many people we have. Like today, we have quite a few people, so it should go pretty fast. A lot of times, it's just 2 of us or 3 of us, so it takes a little longer.
Dan talked about what they find when they come to the farm to glean. Fields full of less than perfect melons, tomatoes, peppers, and squash. Dan says the food left in the fields would go to waste if they didn't come to pick it.
Multiply it nationwide and how much food goes to waste. And it's not really his fault because he has to plant more than he can sell. Because it's our fault as consumers, really. Because you know how it is, you go buy fruit, it's got to be perfect. If it has a little imperfection in it, you don't take it. So that's what he deals with. You know, the buyers come and they want the best looking stuff. And the stuff that's left in the field is not, nothing really that much wrong with it. You know, maybe slight imperfections, but it's perfectly edible. You know, it's there. That's what we do. And it's like I said, it's perfectly edible. You'll see if you come with us. You know, it's good looking stuff.
So I hopped in the back of the van for a bumpy ride out to the first site for picking. As we drove through the fields, Swan pointed out the rye between the pumpkins. She talked about how Will Harriman rotates crops from year to year, and how he plants cover crops such as rye in the off-season. When the field is planted in vegetables, the rye becomes the mulch. Swan sees this as a great example of farmers using sustainable practices, even at larger scales, and even when they aren't certified organic. When we arrive at the pepper field, Swan explains to a new volunteer how to glean.
When you pick them, try to keep the stem on,
okay,
because they'll last longer, and they just come off really easily. You can just pull them. Basically, even the ones that are like purplish or reddish, take those. So basically, you just start at whatever row you're working on, take all the ones off the plant you're working at, move on to the next plant, and just keep going down pretty much. And it looks like there's a lot, so we should be able to fill it really quickly. Sounds good?
Yeah.
Cool. that you think would make them rot quickly, don't take them, just because it'd probably rot out the whole batch eventually,
yeah,
and it's not worth it.
While picking peppers, Swan tells me that they have harvested at other farms, but it's difficult to find something close to town at this scale.
It's just easier to have like once a week with a group at like a really large scale than multiple times a week at like smaller scales. But we're looking to expand to other farms too. We have our food sourcing coordinators like actively searching for more partnerships. So hopefully the program will expand.
At Harriman Farms, they can pick 3,000 pounds of produce in 3 hours. I talked with Will Harriman, the owner of Harriman Farms, about his farm.
So it looks like you have a really diverse farm here. What all do you grow?
So I grow, my main crops are tomatoes and bell peppers. I also grow banana peppers, jalapenos, poblanos, cabbage, winter squash, acorn butternut spaghetti, pumpkins, pie pumpkins, little bit of summer squash, like your zucchini and yellow squash, and a little bit of corn and soybeans. grow about 200 acres.
And about what percentage is in vegetables versus corn and soybeans?
About 60% corn and beans, 40% produce.
I wondered if he was a first-generation farmer.
So I have some people in my family that farm. My grandpa was a farmer, and some cousins farmed, but my parents were not farmers, and I kind of learned from people in the family and learned by working from other people. However, I started this on my own.
Harriman sells mostly wholesale to produce distributors, but he also sells to local grocery stores and to his sister for the retail shop that she runs at the farm in Spencer. Last year was a record year for gleaning for the food bank. They collected 176,000 pounds. Swan said it varies depending on what crops farmers have in excess. Harriman says that the number was so high last year due to the good season they had with butternut squash. Unfortunately for him, everyone had a good year with butternut, and everyone planted a lot of it, which made it harder to sell, which meant that the food bank had tons of butternut squash. I can remember at the food pantry all of the different recipes we came up with for butternut that fall, from breads to pies, cookies and soup. We moved a lot of butternut squash. Harriman says he partners with the food bank because he believes in using everything that you can. He knows that a lot of what is left in the field isn't good enough to sell, but it's good enough to eat. He doesn't want to see it go to waste. Harriman says that the first five times you pick a crop of peppers, they're really nice. After that, they get smaller. He says it's not profitable because you're weeding through so much produce that you can't sell to find the few that you can. The quality declines. Harriman says that another reason for the excess is that farmers plant what they think they can sell. Then things change. The customer wants less than they originally thought, which is the case with the peppers the volunteers are picking now.
Like this color, this like perfect all around pale yellow, and it comes off really easily. That's the kind that you could sell. And
the back of the van is starting to fill up with crates of peppers.
So when we weigh them, they deduct the weight of this thing, which is about 65 pounds, and the weight of the crate, which I don't know what the crate weighs, but they have a chart back in the food bank. So it's when you get on a scale, there'll be a gross weight, which is, you know, including pallets and the crates. And then we deduct those weights. And then
after a couple of hours of picking, the crew will head back to the food bank. Agencies will pick up the produce within the next few days. And households experiencing food insecurity will bring home some of the freshest produce available. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses. Located on the Beeline Trail. More information at personalfinancialservices.net. And Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. On the east side of Bloomington, corner of Pete Ellis and Longview. NeedMoreRoasters.com. We're heading into the kitchen now with food historian Simona Cinotto. Dr. Cinotto is a visiting scholar at Indiana University's Food Institute this fall. He joins us here in the States from the University of Gastronomic Sciences in Palenzo, Italy, where he's a professor of modern history. But today we're going to spend some time with him in the kitchen, preparing a traditional dish that is well known in the region of Italy where Cinotto grew up. What are we going to be making today?
So we are making bagna cauda, B-A-G-N-A-C-A-U-D-A. Okay, this is not even Italian. This is the dialect of the region of Piedmont or Piemonte in northwestern of Italy. The translation is like hot bath, but actually that would be a translation from Italian. Bagno in Italian means actually bath, but not being this Italian. This being again the Piemontese dialect. This actually means. Sauce. The most important ingredients are garlic, a lot of it. Basically, you're supposed to have one head of garlic per person, anchovies, olive oil, and then there are optional ingredients. In particular, in more recent times, the addition of a little bit of butter and a little bit of cream has all become like standard. The making of the sauce is basically is a slow process of having your principal ingredients, your main ingredients, garlic and anchovies with the help of olive oil, melt in a terracotta pot. And the real important trick about making the sauce is actually to cook your sauce on a very low heat. The most important thing, you never want your sauce to fry. Okay, it has to simmer very slowly, and basically you have to continuously stir your sauce until all the ingredients melt together. When you see the little bubbles of the sauce that start to fry because the temperature is too high, stop, lower your gas stove or your electrical stove, whatever, even more, because you don't want that to happen. That will turn the sauce in something really bitter. So when the sauce is ready, and it's gonna take about 30 minutes, I would say. So basically, you put the terracotta pot in which the sauce has been cooked in the center of the table. And in the meantime, you'll have set the table with platters with different vegetables. Basically, there are some vegetables that are especially popular with the sauce. Cardoons, bell peppers, Savoy cabbage, boiled potatoes, baked onions, but then you can completely be creative about it. Everything that is in season and can be dipped in the sauce is basically fine. So fennel is another very popular vegetables, carrots, celery, kohlrabi, and again, broccoli florets, asparagus spears, really everything that you like and is in season, you can dip it in the sauce.
To get started, preheat the oven to 350 and get out a large baking pan for the onions and sweet peppers.
Now, so I'm scrubbing the these four bell peppers, medium size, with olive oil, and place them in the baking pan. Okay, so it's gonna take probably 20-25 minutes for them to soften, so we can peel them. And after we peel them, we're gonna make them in 4 or 6 fillets.
Okay, and you're just leaving those onions whole and just baking them in, just like that.
Okay, don't forget about those guys.
Okay, so how are we going to prepare these small yellow potatoes that we have here?
So my memories of this dish, I remember especially how my mom used to make it. In terms of the preparation of the potatoes, I remember that she liked to leave the skin on and then boil them in water for 20 minutes. We wanted to be soft but still firm. And then after being boiled for 20 minutes, she just removed the exterior skin very carefully, just the exterior skin of the potatoes, not with a knife, but with her finger. So this is the way she did it, and this is the way we're gonna make it. We're gonna make it right now. Now let's turn to the where we have been taking care of the vegetables up to this point. Now let's turn to the bagna cauda, our hot sauce, instead. And the first step is actually the preparation of the garlic.
The recipe calls for one garlic bulb for each person at the table. In our case, that means 5 bulbs of garlic. This is not the individual cloves. This is the whole head of garlic. 5. It takes a while to get it all peeled.
I'm chopping the garlic. Okay. And now we can start our sauce. We press with the palm of our hands any single clove of garlic, and then I proceeded to chop the garlic with a knife on a cutting board, and now the garlic basically is ready. Chop garlic in the extra virgin olive oil. Okay.
Okay, and so we didn't have the special terracotta pot. So what we're using instead is a Dutch oven. This is an enamel-lined Dutch oven. And we have it on a low heat, but not the lowest. And we're just very slowly cooking the garlic with the olive oil.
So let the garlic start to slowly cook in the extra virgin olive oil. The final goal is to stir the chopped garlic and the next ingredient, which is anchovies, into the oil until everything is melted in a sauce.
The original recipe calls for anchovies packed in salt, but if those are hard to find, anchovies and olive oil works too. For 5 people, you'll want about 10 ounces.
Now we have canned anchovies in olive oil. They look very, very, very good, by the way. So we just add them to our garlic, which is, again, gently warming up in extra virgin olive oil on our stove. So now we have in our pot garlic and anchovies basically covered by extra virgin olive oil. We're gonna start stirring. From now on it's basically stirring until the anchovy first and the garlic later is completely melted, okay?
Don't worry about getting all this down. We've got the recipe for you on our website, eartheats.org. We've also got photos of Simone Cinotto making bagna cauda. You can find it all at eartheats.org. While the sauce cooks, we cut up the rest of the vegetables into dipping sizes and arrange them on a platter. Cinotto gives us a little background on the dish.
This food is not even a food. It's like it's a culture in itself, because it's more important, I think, how is eaten and when is eaten than the food itself. It's supposed to to be something enjoying in the fall and especially in the winter in very large groups of people. A food that is supposed to restore your body worn out by hard work, strengthen your body to be very healthy, good for you, comfort food in that social and cultural context of rural northwestern Italy of the 17th century on.
Cinotto stood at the stove, gently stirring and cooking the sauce for at least an hour. He finally declared the sauce just about ready.
So we're almost done, and the garlic and anchovies are all melted very nicely. So we're basically ready to add just a little bit, like a quarter stick of butter and some cream. So this would be placed in the center, in the middle of the center of the table, so everybody can help themselves with the sauce, and we're gonna dip the fancy vegetables that we have prepared before. And so there are rounds and rounds of people helping themselves to the vegetables, helping themselves to the sauce, and dipping their pieces of vegetables. So it's a really, you know, bodily, sensual experience. It's basically the relationship that you create with the bagnacaudo.
The sauce is rich and deeply flavored, yet the intensity is offset by the fresh vegetable. My favorites were the Savoy cabbage leaves and the fennel slices. The potatoes are also very comforting. The dish feels nourishing and warming, yet still a bit decadent. To hear more from Simone Cinotto, tune in to Earth Eats next week. Lee Bush and Maddie Chera interviewed Cinotto about his work at the University of Gastronomic Sciences in Italy and find out what he's been up to this fall at Indiana University. Remember, you can find recipes, photos, articles, and links on our website, eartheats.org. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses. Located on the Beeline Trail. More information at personalfinancialservices.net. Need more coffee roasters? A woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. On the east side of Bloomington, corner of Pete Ellison Longview. Needmoreroasters.com. And Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leaders Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killow, Daniel Orr, everyone at Farm Bloomington Restaurant, and Harvest Public Media. Our executive producer is John Bailey. I'm Kate Young, and that's our show. See you next week.